Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and tonight I'm proud to bring you another episode of Sword and Sandal Cinema. But first, a sample of what is to come in Sword and Sandal Superheroes, Strange Science, and Outer Space. Thousands of years ago, Hercules, Astraea, and Mercury were granted immortality, eternal youth, and superpowers by Sentinel-1, an alien AI computer charged with protecting the Earth. They are now the planet's resident guardians. Hercules has super strength. Astraea can morph into any animal. Mercury has super speed. All of them can fly like Superman. Hercules obviously loses this ability at some point as he relies on Pegasus to get around in Freedom Force, the sequel series. Their first challenge as a team, defeat Morpheus, who has all of their abilities combined and more knowledge of Sentinel-1's secrets than they currently command. Morpheus was the alien machine's first attempt at creating a human superhero. The S-1 learned that too much power can corrupt as Morpheus turned on him and became Earth's first superpowered supervillain. In some of the other episodes, our champions go on to fight. Giant robots intent on stealing our gold. Kronos, a time traveler from the future, sent to sabotage the construction of our first moon base. An AI sorceress who moved the North Pole into another dimension. Anubis, a jackal-headed ET scientist who blew up his home planet by unleashing pyramid power, was trapped by the ancient Egyptians and freed by British archaeologists 5,000 years later. Comedy relief is provided by an annoying little maintenance robot called Emo. Some trivia, this series was originally named Young Sentinels, and there was actually an attempt at launching a live-action version. They succeeded with Isis, who is one of the characters in Freedom Force, which I mentioned above and reviewed recently. And that is your taste of the program to come. And without further ado, I bring you the one, the only, the legendary Brian Walker, who's on the road. Greetings, Brian. How are you?
I'm well tonight, Hercules. How are you this evening?
I'm doing great. I'm preparing myself for the lion diet. So I'm making all these modifications to what I eat and how I exercise. And
well, I've been very eager to, listen to your experimentation with it and find out how it's going for you.
It'll either work, it won't work, or it'll work somewhat. So whatever happens,
it could be all of the above.
Yes, maybe. So it'll be a grand adventure, and he'll wind up with a story to tell at some later point. So I'm happy whatever happens.
Well, and like I said, I'm excited to hear about it. Tonight, I'm coming to you from Tybee Island, Georgia. It's Savannah's Beach. It's about half an hour or so outside of Savannah. And we've just started our month-long trek. We've only been here since yesterday, and so far, we're having a good time. And tonight what I wanted to talk about was the Peplum episodes on Mystery Science Theater 3000. As a lot of people know, Mystery Science Theater 3000 was a show on Comedy Central and then Sci-Fi Network back in the late 80s all the way through the 90s. And the Peplums that were shown on the show, which is a pretty nice cross-section if you take a look at them, they showed Hercules, Hercules Unchained, there's two Steve Reeves movies, Reg Park's Hercules and the Captive Women, Hercules Against the Moon Men, which I thought you would probably be really keen on, Colossus
somewhere.
Colossus and the Headhunters, and finally The Loves of Hercules. Those are the Peplums that were featured over actually 13 seasons of Mystery Science Theater 3000. And before I talk about the movies themselves, I'd probably better talk about what Mystery Science Theater 3000 is or was. And I'm kind of unsure which verb tense to use there. Because things come and go. But the original version of Mystery Science Theater 3000 actually began airing in November of 1988, almost 36 years ago, on an independent television station in Minneapolis called KTMA. Its call letters have since changed, and the station has indeed changed hands. It's now WUCW and is more network-oriented. At the time, however, it was an independent station. And it was the show was the brainchild of a failed prop comic named Joel Hodgson, who had some success in New York in the 80s. He appeared several times on Letterman and several times on Saturday Night Live, let's say 83 to 85 or so. Mm-hmm. But his career didn't really progress past that. So he was originally from Wisconsin, but called Minneapolis his home base. And when his prop comedy career didn't go as well as planned, he moved back to Minneapolis and then started this show, which really revolved around watching an old B-movie, something you might see at a drive-in or you might see late night on television. Oftentimes these were public domain films, sometimes not. Sometimes they were, though. The show... they shot, I think, 21 episodes, that is, for that first season that the show was on, was an independent and was on KTMA. And although it was really rough around the edges, and you can still see most of the original episodes if you know where to look on YouTube, it had a rough start at the beginning, but actually there was something really charming and endearing about it, and actually very funny at times as well. And it caught the attention of the Comedy Channel executives. The Comedy Channel later became Comedy Central, as the name that we know it by now. But at the time, the Comedy Channel was a fledgling channel, and they were in sore need of original programming. They were running old sitcom episodes like, let's say That Girl, things like that, back from the 60s and 70s, and they just weren't finding an audience, and they really needed some original programming. And to tell you the truth, the success of Mystery Science Theater 3000 was one of the things that kept the Comedy Channel afloat. And as a result, Mystery Science Theater had a 7-season run on Comedy Channel / Comedy Central beginning in 1989. They were there for 7 seasons. Some seasons offered more episodes than others. Some seasons were only a 13-episode season. Others were 24 episodes. And season 7 was only, I believe, about 6 or 7 episodes, something like that. Throughout the years, they tackled a variety of different film genres. A lot of it really depended on whether the film was public domain or if they could get the rights to show it on the show. And what the show really did was is exposed a lot of younger people to these great old B movies. They did they poked fun at the situations in the films, but not necessarily the films themselves. They do treat the films usually pretty well with kid gloves, and they'll call out a terrible film, if it indeed is one. But largely through the act of riffing, what the original host, Joel, and his robots, who were mostly played by Trace Beaulieu and Frank Conniff, at least during the Comedy Central years, I should say, really were all about comedy, and they had host segments that really tied the show together in between segments of the film. The conceit of the series was that Joel and his robots were stranded in space, and they were shot there by these evil scientists. And they would have to do invention exchanges. They would come back in the middle of the film and do little skits and comedy bits and things like that. The shows on Comedy Central and later on the Sci-Fi Network, because the show did jump networks at one, well, at a couple of points actually in its history, really revolved around a two-hour time block. And you, if you parse out the commercials, and that's usually for a two-hour time block, that's usually going to be, ooh, gosh, you know, probably 25 minutes or so. Oftentimes, the entire film wasn't shown because with the commercials, that is, and with the segments that were, they're pretty liberally applied, you know, throughout the history of comedy or throughout the history of Mystery Science Theater 3000. Oftentimes, you know, a 90-minute movie was actually going to be too much, and they would have to edit the films down a bit. Usually that wasn't for content so much as just trying to fit everything in. You know, so they would do a bit of a digest version of the films themselves. And usually what they did at Mystery Science Theater 3000 is they would cut out parts that lagged a bit, parts that they couldn't really do anything with in terms of riffing. And that seemed to be their guiding principle when they did have to shorten, a film. Now, some old B-movies, you know, barely cracked 60 minutes. Those those were a little bit different for them. With a movie that didn't last much longer than an hour, they would often have to pad those, and they might do it with, sometimes they would show old short features from the 30s, 40s, or 50s, or maybe even some educational films, which oftentimes did not have copyright, so they were technically public domain, and you could show them anywhere, and you could do anything with them. The show was a big success. You know, I was a fan early on, you know, from the early 90s. By the time my cable system picked up Comedy Central or the Comedy Channel, whichever one it was at the time, and I was instantly hooked because they did show a variety of different genre. You didn't always get, you know, a horror film or an action film. I mean, oftentimes you did get other genres like peplum. And, for me, the first time I ever saw Hercules Against the Moon Men actually was on Mystery Science Theater 3000. And I think that happened for a lot of people. It did pull a lot of people in to watching older movies and appreciating them, you know, quite a bit. Although they do, you know, they did make fun of them in a way, but I think they mostly did it respectfully. Now, a lot happened with the series over the years. It was canceled on Comedy Central.
Why did they cancel it? Because it did bring attention to the Comedy Central, and it was a long-lasting series. Why would they cancel it?
Well, there were a few things at play there. In the early days of the Comedy Channel, they gave the producers of Mystery Science Theater carte blanche. They didn't give them a whole lot of money, but they gave them enough to produce the episodes, and they didn't meddle with it. They didn't say, well, you can't say this or you can't do that. They just sort of let them go. And increasingly, as time went on and as Comedy Central had more and more of their own programming, they started meddling more and more in the series, which is never a good thing, to tell you the truth. When the bean counters and the executives are trying to tell you how to entertain, it's usually a bad thing.
Yes.
And I think a lot of the cast members were wanting to go their separate ways and try different things. Several of them had been stand-up comics before the series began. The original host, Joel Hodgson, obviously was a stand-up comic. And one of the other driving forces behind the series, Frank Conniff, was also a stand-up comedian. He was born to well-to-do parents in the Hamptons in New York. His father was a famous journalist. And Frank, unfortunately, had a bad drug problem at one time. So he went into a rehabilitation center in Indianapolis. He left New York City, went to Minneapolis, in order to dry out, to get away from his addiction, which he was fortunately successful at. This was about 40 years ago. And one of the things that he did in order to combat, his drug problem was to begin a stand-up comedy career, from the ground up. And so he knew comedy pretty well, by the time the show began rolling. And Conniff was the one who largely picked the films that were shown on Mystery Science Theater 3000. He would go through, countless hours of old VHS tapes, watching films, trying to figure out if there was enough there in order to bring it into the series as an episode. And he did pick a number of films, in the peplum. I think it was six overall in the peplum genre. Now, midway through season five, when the show was still on Comedy Central, the host and co-producer, Joel Hodgson, abruptly left the series. He left it sort of in the middle of the season because he and his other co-producer, Jim Mallon, weren't really seeing eye to eye on the show and the direction that it was going to take. When that happened, the series head writer, Mike Nelson, took over the hosting of the series for the next two seasons or so. But by the time the seventh season rolled around, they were getting a lot of flack from Comedy Central. Comedy Central was wanting to meddle in it more. A lot of the main cast members were wanting to try their hand at maybe television films, maybe even hitting the road. So they decided to let it go. Well, they almost at the last minute got an offer from the Sci-Fi Network. It was a more lucrative offer, and Sci-Fi Network also had access to Universal's catalog. So then they wouldn't have to constantly try to figure out if they could get the rights to show a film because they already had that with their Sci-Fi Network contract. So the show stayed on the Sci-Fi Network for an additional three seasons, but it was a limiting factor for them in that they had to do films that had some sort of tangential science fiction or horror bent to them, whereas before they had been able to do any kind of film. And Sci-Fi, I think, did meddle some here and there. I don't think they were too invasive, but by the time the 10th season was finished, the show had sort of run its course, and Sci-Fi Network canceled it in 1999, but ran episodes until I think 2002 or 2003. They usually did that on Saturday, on Saturdays, as I recall. After the show went off the air, the original cast kind of went their own separate ways. A lot of them tried different things. Some of them actually came back to the whole concept of movie riffing. And three of the cast members, Mike Nelson, the second host, Kevin Murphy, who had been Tom Servo, one of the puppets, and Bill Corbett, who for a while had been one of the other puppets, a Crow T robot. Came together and decided to do their own series of films called Riff Tracks. Now, these did not air on television, but they did disseminate them through the Internet via streaming. So you could download them or you could just watch them directly from their website. They've actually been doing that now for 18 years. They started doing it in 2006. And it's been wildly successful. They've done hundreds of films at this point. They've done films that they ordinarily couldn't get the rights to. I mean, they have riffed some fairly new movies, but Whenever they do one of the new movies, and they don't do that much anymore, to tell you the truth, but whenever they do one, you just download their comments. You can't download the whole film because they don't have the rights to it. But they can get around that just with downloading their comments to it. But most of RiffTrack's output is actually something. It's a cohesive. It's film and commentary all in one. And they're pretty affordable, too. Anywhere from a full film is usually about $10 to $12. The more expensive on the $12 end of things is usually a more high-definition copy, which these old eyes of mine can't see anyway. And they've also brought in a couple of the other original cast members, Mary Jo Peel and Bridget Jones Nelson, who were both on the original series. And they would do acting skits and comedy skits, but they also did a lot of the writing for the series. And they host their own riff tracks as well. And to tell you the truth, the duo of Mary Jo Peel and Bridget Nelson are actually, they've done some of my favorite riff tracks. Mystery Science Theater did come back onto Netflix about 17 years after they stopped airing new episodes on the Sci-Fi Network. And when Joel Hodgson put the new show together in 2016, there were some issues there. Prior to that, about 9 or 10 years before that, Joel Hodgson had decided to resurrect movie riffing with his own series called Cinematic Titanic. And that featured Joel Hodgson, Mary Jo Peel, Frank Conniff, Trace Beaulieu, and a season one cast member of the KTMA, I should say, cast member, J. Elvis Weinstein, who was a comedian in his own right, and was at the time, too. And Greg and I saw Cinematic Titanic. We saw two different episodes live in Ann Arbor, Michigan, at the State Theater about 14 years ago, as a matter of fact. And we had a great time. It was a blast. There's still another offshoot of Mystery Science Theater called The Mad Spack, and that features Frank Conniff and Trace Beaulieu, who had been both with Cinematic Titanic and then before that Mystery Science Theater 3000. They've been doing that for about the past 8 years or so, and we've seen them live in Pittsburgh a number of times. Unfortunately, when COVID hit in 2020, it killed their gigs. You know, they couldn't travel from city to city, you know, with their films and, you host, you know, hundreds of people, you know, in a theater to watch it with them live and hear them riff it. And what they did instead when COVID hit, you know, 4 years ago, was they moved it all online. And every month, and they've been doing this now for 47 or 48 months, they've just about hit the four-year mark, is that they have a downloadable or you can stream it live film for $10. And it's a solid two and a half hours of entertainment. They have a pre-show reel at the very beginning of it now, which it consists of a lot of old drive-in ads for movies and snack bar, you know, things like that. And then they have the main feature, and then they'll do an interview afterwards. So it's a lot of entertainment for $10, to tell you the truth, and that's gone very successfully as well. The reboot on Mystery Science Theater 3000, I wish I had more and better things to say about it, but I wasn't entirely satisfied with it. The seasons 11 and 12 appeared on Netflix, and one of my favorite comedians, Jonah Ray, was picked to be the new host. Unfortunately, the episodes themselves weren't the best. Joel Hodgson didn't want the old cast members to come back because he wanted to try to pull in like a new audience, and it wasn't entirely successful. And on the other hand, he also alienated a lot of the old fans because they weren't seeing the same cast members that they remembered in their old roles. So, like I said, they didn't go very well. The episodes weren't written very well either, quite honestly. Some were better than others. Of the Netflix episodes, they did The Loves of Hercules, which is Mickey Hargitay and Jane Mansfield. It was on season 11 as episode 205. And they did a pretty good job with it. With that one, it's fun. It's pretty watchable. I think it would have been better if the original crew had done it, because I think they would have had more jokes about Jane Mansfield and such. I think the new writers didn't really know who these actors were as well as the old writers and cast members would have. If anybody wants to see these, they can watch them generally for free. You can see them on Pluto. Pluto has a dedicated Mystery Science Theater 3000 channel. Tubi also has one. We have Samsung TVs at home, and Samsung Plus, which is their own free streaming service, also has its own MST3K channel. And wow. On YouTube, since Christmas, the Mystery Science Theater 3000 has been streaming steadily. It's been streaming now for a little over 4 months, and it just keeps going. The show is still popular, and like I said, a lot of it can be watched basically for free. Of the Peplum episodes, I have to say probably my favorite one is Hercules and the Captive Women, which was done during season 4 as episode 83. I thought they had a lot to work with there, because he's sort of the relaxed, lazier Hercules.
Yes.
He's not the Steve Reeves Hercules where he's got to go on a journey and kill something or do something that's impossible in order to come back and save the day. Reg Park and Hercules and the Cast of Women is more along the lines of just, I'll get to it when I get to it. He has more of a civil servant attitude toward it all that I really appreciate.
I appreciate it.
But these episodes are a lot of fun.
Yes, they are. And Reg Park is very self-assured. He seems totally comfortable in his skin. That's the only way I can describe him.
And that's interesting for somebody who really had practically no acting experience. But he doesn't seem nervous at all. He's just, I'm here. point the camera my way.
Wow, that is quite a history, and I was unaware of most of it. I'm very impressed.
Well, and like I said, I think they're worth a viewing. I would, if you want my input, I would start with Hercules and the Captive Women. Colossus and the Headhunters is pretty well done as well. That's with Kirk Morris, obviously. That's a season 6 episode. And then Hercules and the Moon Men, I think, is very, very well done.
I think that's very well done, and we're going to cover Hercules and the Moon Men. And I'd like for you to include the feedback from Mystery Science Theater 3000 when we do the panel. That input would be really
great.
Really
great.
Unfortunately, we've run out of time. I really appreciate your giving us an update from the road and during your vacation. I'm very grateful for that, and I'm glad you're having a great time.
Oh, we are. And like I said, we're just getting started.
Good. And how can people locate you virtually online?
Find me on the web by going to your favorite search engine and typing in Brian's Drive-In Theater. That's Brian with an I. Or you could just go to brinsdriveintheater.com and find me there and watch the movie of the day. And today's movie is a peplum, Vulcan, Son of Jupiter, with Roger Brown and Gordon Mitchell, which is actually a really fun movie to watch.
Yes, it was.
If you want to interact with me on social media, go to Facebook and type in Brian J. Walker or Brian's Drive-In Theater, and that should lead you my way.
Thanks again, Brian. Joyous journeys and amazing adventures, and I look forward to our next interaction.
Okay, take care, Hercules. Have a good evening.
You too. Be well. And I'm going to continue with another brief entry into the Sword and Sandal Superheroes, Strange Science in Outer Space. If you, like me, have become increasingly more enamored of Savage Mojo's Dogs of Hades setting and wish to spend more time there, or if you'd like to take a quick look, see to discover with all the hoopla's about, then I would highly recommend Dogs of Hades characters. This product contains Savage World states and descriptions for 9 human characters designed specifically for the Dogs of Hades RPG. They range from Athenian to barbarian, freeman to slave, upstanding citizens to criminals, nobles to both those born base. They're all unique, and some would even be described as a tad bit eccentric. Any and all would serve well as PCs or NPCs in your adventure. I've been toying with creating a border settlement where I can run the one-sheet adventures Harpy's Young Love, Aphrodite, and Young Love, Hera. As I flesh out the location, I may also begin populating it with people beyond those found in the minis. Dogs of Hades characters has proven a tremendous help in this regard. Sophocles is a young Athenian logician. I wonder if, yes, I think that might actually work. See you at the Garden of Athena. And now for part two of our show with Ron Carson. Greetings, Ron. How are you?
Good evening, Sadlerfield. What's going on?
Not much. What's going on with you?
Well, today, a very bittersweet day, being that it is St. George's Day, and my father, of course, was aforementionedly named George. And 4 years ago today, we lost my mom, your aunt, as her memory remains eternal and everlasting. So it's been a pretty tough day for me to endure. But it's kind of nice to unwind with a nice feature film at the Coliseum. And tonight we're featuring the story of Antigone. And ironically, you just mentioned the Greek poet Sophocles, because
yes,
this is based by his writings.
Yes, I haven't seen that movie in very many years, but I remember it was a version of the play.
Bet any money that you have it on DVD somewhere in the house.
I'm sure I have it somewhere, but I haven't seen it in years.
All right. Well, let me give you the lowdown, as the weather is very cooperative out here. The folks maybe have a light jacket or a sweater. They are enjoying their free popcorn and coffee while they are watching this masterpiece directed by Yorgos Zavalas. That's the way I have to pronounce his last name properly, you know. And, of course, the legendary actress Irini Papas was signed up for the title role of Antigone. Now, other co-stars included Manos Katrakis, who was the king of Thebes, Creon, Nikos Kazis played his son, Haemon, Maro Kunto was Antigone's sister, Ilia Livikou, portrayed by Creon's wife, Eurydice, with Byron Pallas, Yorgos Karetas, and Thanasis Kefalopoulos as some of the elders of Thebes. So we can't go any more Greek than this, you know what I mean?
No, definitely. That's as Greek as you can get, and that's a good thing. It's a Greek play, and
yes,
I guess it's good when Greek people are playing Greek characters in a Greek play.
Absolutely. Now, I bet you didn't know the film picked up 2 accolades at the Thessaloniki International Film Festival, as Papas won Best Actress honors, and Argyris Kounadis with Best Musical Score. Now, I'm going to take you back to early 71, 72 or something. Do you remember a sailor by the name of Argyris that came over and visited both your house and my house when he was on leave?
Very vaguely. That was many years ago.
His last name was Simitis, and your mother actually has the framed photo of the butterfly collage that he created for both your mom and my mom.
Oh, wow.
Argyris was a very, very nice man. And that's the one thing I take out of this, that, excuse me, I've been doing too much talking today. So
sorry to hear that.
Excuse my frog in the throat over here, but I have fond memories of Adigiri, you know? And it basically is like you always look back at the people who were very, very joyous and nice to you in life. And I know he was very, very cordial to both our families. He stayed over at your place when you were still in the Bronx. He stayed over in Washington Heights with me, mom, and dad as well. And like I said, he was a sailor, and he took leave in New York, and he decided to come over and visit us, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I really think the butterfly photo, you know, I said to your mom last time I visited, I said, oh, I still see the the butterfly frame with that Yeti. And then she goes, yes, I remember my mom had it someplace hung up in her apartment in Fort Lee also before. I'm pretty sure our uncle has that frame, and I would like to put that up myself as a memory for both my mother and that Yeti because, you know, they were both very, very special people. In all ways admired. Of course, I'm also a little concerned with my aunt, your mom, who has been having some issues right now with her health. But
yeah, she's in her
90s.
So, and we have my
father-in-law.
She's in her 90s, and my father-in-law is in his 90s also. So,
Well, thank God you and Athena are next door to keep an eye on her. And I did speak with her about 2 hours ago just to kill some time, being that I had to wait here until 9:30 to do this segment with you. And she proceeded to tell me about what happened, and I did express a lot of concern. Now, I will see you guys the following weekend because our Easter is on Sunday, May 5th.
Oh, I wasn't aware of that. I don't observe.
Well, now you are.
The Greek Orthodox faith anymore, so I'm not very good at keeping track of holidays.
Well, that's what I'm all about. I basically have all this necessary information padlocked in the back of my head, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, but I just wanted to take some time and salute Adigiri, who was such a nice man, and like I said, his memory also remains eternal and everlasting. Now, let's go back to the movie over here, okay?
Okay.
The plot line begins with Oedipus realizing he married his mother, Jocasta, and he stepped down as king of Thebes. Now, his two sons fight to the death to earn the succession of ruling that area. Creon was appointed king, and Polynices did not receive a decent burial for his actions. Now, as you know, Antigone was Oedipus's daughter, and took up the task of burying her brother, but her sister Ismene completes the action, and as a result, both women were arrested. The gods were angered by this move, causing the main protagonist to take her own life. Haemon also commits suicide, and the end result shows up that Creon has renounced the throne, so Thebes has no king in the tail end of this movie.
Okay.
And, yes, the film was shot in our native Greece all throughout the country. And it only runs at just over an hour and a half in length. And, like I said, the musical score was nicely presented by another Argiri, Kunadis. And he picked up the Best Musical Score Award in the Thessaloniki Film Festival. Now, if you're wondering if the movie is available on DVD Region 1, the answer is yes. We have no final totals on how much the film grossed worldwide, but audiences from across the pond embraced the movie, and it also became a hit here in the United States because of all the Greek population that was pretty much prevalent, including us over here. So, but yes, it is available on DVD. If you want to go to Amazon and check it out, you can obtain a copy of this. So it's.
I'm going to wait to see if, as you said, I can locate it amongst my many DVDs and sundry places that are on the Greek and Roman and Egyptian antiquities. But
well,
I'm
pretty sure, Sadiq, that you will. Go ahead.
If I don't have it, I've definitely seen it at some point or another.
Well, if I know you, Sadhguru, you probably have it somewhere in the pile of films that you've accumulated all these decades.
Yes, I probably do. Now, we are starting a new show.
Yes.
It's called Sword and Sandal Superheroes,
mm-hmm.
Weird Science in Outer Space. That's the working title.
Oh, nice.
So
nice.
Brian Walker, he introduced us today to some Peplum films that were riffed on Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be using a few of those in the show. We're going to be reviewing the movies. We're going to have panels on the movies. So if you're interested, just let me know, and I'll invite you to the panels.
Oh, absolutely. I would definitely be interested in partaking in this type of project over here. And speaking of Brian, another well-done show. I was listening to him for a little bit with you, and I understand he's on the road taking a vacation and still took the time to check in today.
That's a tradition with Brian. He does that whenever he's on the road. He calls in for his shows and gives us a taste of his voyages and the experiences therein, and it's a lot of fun.
Well, by all means, when you go on Facebook, look up Brian's Drive-In and hit like on it, and you'll be treated to many good things, including screenings of former films that were not even of the Peplum sort, but they were like B-movies?
Yes, he covers Euro spy movies. He covers spaghetti westerns. He covers science fiction, horror. So he covers a wide variety of B-movies, cheesecake movies, beefsteak movies, all sorts of movies.
Beefsteak. Remember when we used to all crowd in the car and go to Beefsteak Charlie's over in Paramus?
Oh, that was years ago. Yes, I remember. And they had a salad special, I remember.
Oh, I know. It was awesome. A salad buffet and the steak, which I'm not really a big fan of. They were always tender, no fat, just perfectly cooked to perfection. And it's times like this I miss our old days of things that have not, you know, resurfaced in our past. I mean, a little bit of it has evaporated, Xanthofe, you know?
Well, there are new days and new things arising, and
yeah.
Some of them I like, some of them I don't, and some of them I miss the old ways. Like our printer now has gotten remarkably complicated, and it seems it needs to check in, and it gets like updates, and it informs us of things. I just want my printer to print, just like I just want my phone to make phone calls. I don't need a camera
exactly.
Or a computer in my pocket. So I can agree with you there. But then there's things like the internet, you know, which have opened up knowledge and information and entertainment and all sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
And brought it to a touch of our fingertips, you know, whereas before you had to do a lot of looking around and trying to find things.
Now, well, you remember the days when we used to get our research from encyclopedias.
I remember the encyclopedias. I remember going to the library. I remember all that.
Yep. Funk and Wagnalls. I remember you had a series of encyclopedia in the old neighborhood in the Bronx.
Yes, I remember the Funk and Wagnalls, too.
Yep, we had those at our disposal during our early days when we were in parochial school. And speaking of St. Spiridon, I just wanted to throw a footnote. If
sure.
you remember, your sister portrayed the title role in the presentation of Antigone that was featured many moons ago over there on Wadsworth Avenue.
I didn't remember that.
Oh, I do.
Which are my sisters? I have two.
This was Penny, not Ellen. Yeah. So Penny played the title role of Antigone in that play, and I was cast in a supporting role, I remember, as one of the guards or one of the people who was an elder of Thebes, I think. I'm not sure which one, but I didn't have any names on that one, but I'm pretty positive that my role was brief, and I tried telling my mother, God rest her soul, I said, Mom, the title role was a woman. I could not play Antigone, so your niece was playing her in more ways than one.
So I don't remember that, and I think I would have remembered that.
Well, I do remember. I mean, are some good times from that facility that I pretty much keep in the back of my head. But you and I were talking about St. Spirit on our last visit, and you favored me with such funny anecdotes with you and your classmates, which I'm not going to get into on TV or on radio over here. So, but, you know, we had to make the best out of a difficult situation, so to speak.
Yes, I don't miss those days, but I miss other days.
No, neither do I, to tell you the truth. I mean, parochial school is a very harrowing experience for all of us, but, you know, as of opposed to what's going on in schools these days right now, it's kind of nice that your stepson is homeschooled and stays where he is over at home. You know, he's much safer where he is right now in Tenafly, for sure.
Yes, Tenafly is a very safe place, relatively. Now, you had informed me that you needed to leave a little early tonight.
I don't know what time it is. I mean, I can give you to like 10 of 10, because I've been at work all day today, and I had to wait to pretty much do this appearance. I'm going to try to see if we can coordinate an earlier time for the next appearance in May. So I'll be in discussion with you on that down the road. So,
okay. And, it's almost 10 to 10. That's why I brought it up. So I want to
Play one of your magical songs, you know, that you normally throw on to fill the time. And I'm pretty sure you had another guest coming up at 10 o'clock. So.
Yes, it's been a long and, winding road. Well, thank you very much for taking the time from your schedule to be on the show. Thank you very much for the memories and for reviewing Antigone. How can people find you and tap into your world?
Well, you can easily find me on Facebook. All they got to do is just type in Ron Carson on the toolbar, and my page will come on, and you can friend me at any time. I'm also on the LinkedIn site. And that's the social business network rummaging through as well. And the bottom line is that I am on the air on the weekends here in Great Barrington, but Thursdays I do a retro cruising show with Kevin Titus up north at WBTN in Bennington, Vermont. So you can listen through the web at radio.net-WBTN between 5 and 8 p.m. on Thursdays. And we play an assortment of music from all genres, including doo-wop, crooners, novelty songs, one-hit wonders. We delve into the 60s, 70s, and 80s. And in the last hour, we concentrate on classic country as well. So it's a hodgepodge of music. And it's picked by us and picked by you, the listeners in general, too, so because we take requests. And I know my girlfriend, Carol, is in the quiet room listening. So hello, Carol, wherever you are. Hope you enjoyed the show.
And so, I wish you joyous journeys and amazing adventures and a safe journey home. And I look forward to our next conversation, be it on or off the air.
Yes, okay. We will talk at some point by week's end. Okay, Ksadalfe?
Okay, Yaharak Sadalfe, Kalo Taksidi, I'll talk to you soon.
Well, I'm not leaving yet. I'm not coming down to Tenafly until next Saturday.
Okay.
Not this weekend, but next weekend because of the Easter celebrations. So there's a lot to sort out over here. But you enjoy the rest of your evening, and love you.
Love you too. Be well. Take care, and I'll talk to you soon.
And tatapume, as they say in our language, okay?
Okay, tatapume. Take care.
All right, kalinikta. You too. Bye-bye.
And now for the song. I always play the same songs because I like them so much. And we're going to listen to If You Can Dream, or actually let's listen to Mighty Elohim. I don't play that as often. And it's a song that has a lot of relevance to me and to my entertainment. Here we go, Mighty Elohim.
Sound the trumpet.